Welcome to Path to Glory, a Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. I'm your host, Amon Kusro, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jonathan Davis.
Hello.
What is going on, my man?
Not much. Just ate some Thai food.
Yeah, I just had some Whataburger.
Mmm.
Yeah, I've been craving that for a while. For all my non-Texas folks, you're missing out. Nasty.
I've actually been craving that for like a couple weeks, and I wanted to go there I think last week, but my girlfriend had went without me, so she didn't want to. Very rude.
Dude, that's like the biggest party foul.
She was visiting her family, so I wasn't with her, you know. But
wow.
My fault, I guess.
What is your go-to sandwich?
The Monterey melt.
Oof.
And then I add jalapenos to it.
Oof.
So good.
So mine is patty melt, no onions.
Yeah, that's pretty good too. I think I've had a lot of their stuff, but the Monterey melt for me is on a different level. So they've actually stopped having it on the menu, but if you can still sort of build it on their app.
Wow, so. You know their secret menu now.
And this has been Path to Fast Food in Texas with Jonathan and Amon.
That's right. And for reference, if anyone was wondering. It was recorded on August 10th, 2020. And so our episode topic for today is, we're always going to cover, the usual stuff, Underworlds news, community shout outs, and listener questions. But our main topic for today is going to be the events format.
Yeah. Good old team event.
That's right. It's something that we've both said numerous times that it's our favorite format. And we're looking... We're getting pretty excited to talk about it, honestly. I don't even know why I can't speak today. I'm so excited. Must have been that patty melt that got me.
Yeah.
But before we do that, let's jump into some Underworlds news. Jonathan, what do you have to share?
So we heard yesterday on Sunday that the last two warbands, Crushes and Blade Coven, last two warbands of Beastgrave, are going to come out 2 weeks from now-ish on the 22nd. And you can pre-order them this Saturday. We also saw today they released, everything in the Crushes box. Morgox Crushes. So that's pretty cool. I think we'll have an episode dedicated to all the new stuff once we have the Daughters box.
Yeah. I'm excited for, always I'm happy to talk about cards that, we had access to a little bit ahead of schedule. But... it was a little frustrating for me because I was told that it would be dropped tomorrow. And so I was not prepared today. So I'll be working into the night to get my, preview stuff out.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Cool. I think there's probably too much for us to talk about today. So let's move on to the next thing. And we'll want to wait till we have all the info anyway.
That's right. So another update is the... Eyes of the Nine have come out for Warhammer Underworlds Online. They haven't come out. Well, they haven't come out yet, but right. They are coming out soon, TM. So everyone has seen them online. I will say, as the models look gorgeous, so do the renders, the 3D renders of these fantastic looking models. The Tarrasch and Narvia look great.
Yeah,
and he's buff, man. He's a big guy, and it's a little disappointing to see. him die so easily on the tabletop.
Yeah, that's true. I'm excited to see the warband come out. I'm surprised that that's what they picked. I'm probably more excited to see what other cards they release with them or soon after them. But I think especially if we get some magic, it'll be interesting to see the eyes there without the Curse Breakers.
That's right. And because right now there are no magic universals.
Yeah, other than the faction ones for Thorns, that's it.
Yeah, so... They gonna need some magical help soon. Hopefully, Zinch is on the way there.
Yeah.
What else we got?
The other thing we had here is that the Adepticon special game mode was sent out to, I guess, anyone with tickets to the Warhammer preview. I don't think I was signed up for that, so I didn't get it. But we have pictures of it, and basically it's like an alternate game mode that you can play. It seems like... based on what your Grand Alliance is, you get different abilities and rules, and each side has like a health pool and stuff. I haven't tried it yet, but I'd like to. And I'm going to get all the pictures from Reziquin on the Discord, and I'll make sure all those are on Well of Power sooner than later. I think they're on Facebook somewhere too, but I want to give it a permanent place if possible.
Yeah, great idea. I mean, you are a database, so you should have all the data there. I did not sign up for this event because I was going to TO Adepticon, and so Games Workshop. I was coming with them as part of their entourage, and so they were like, "Hey, you don't need to buy tickets to anything. You'll come to the preview. We got you." And so I'm hoping that includes a copy of this game mode. And you know, for any of my Games Workshop employee friends out there listening, I will be sending an email.
Yeah, so. I think they also, in the last time we talked about how they announced they were coming out with different game modes, one of the ones they mentioned on their roadmap sounds like it might be this. So hopefully there'll be like a wider distribution, you know, of this mode anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And as always, the internet is a very, you know, active community. So as soon as you get those out on your website, and, you know, of course, we'll direct them through that, through the show notes, then I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of people playing this game mode, which is awesome.
Yeah, I still need to try the single player mode as well, the Crusher mode. So.
Oh, the Ogroid Crusher?
Yeah, yeah. So now we have a couple different ways to play if we want to mix it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Another cool piece of news was that Games Workshop decided to release some items called like supply drops or supply crates. Mm-hmm. And so the first two were for 40K and Underworlds. And the Underworlds one contained the Godsworn Hunt, mm-hmm. The Dreadfane Warbands, Echoes of Dreadfane or something.
Champions of Dreadfane, I think.
There we go, yep. And then a number of other Warhammer Underworlds accessories, items like the Beastgrave Terrain, a game mat or play mat, deck box, counters, and a carry case. And it's that brown Beastgrave carry case, similar to the one from Night Vault, which is green. It's sold out now, and it was only available in the UK and EU. So it was a really cool way to get a bunch of the supplementary items as well as a cool warband. And it sold out instantly. Like when I found out about it, it was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's had sort of mixed reception. I think maybe if you already had the whole collection and you bought this, I don't really know what you may have been expecting, but maybe people were hoping for some Beastgrave stuff. But I think for a new player, this is a pretty good deal. I don't even have the terrain, so that actually would have been cool. But.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, you did get like some Beastgrave stuff, right? A lot of it mm-hmm. is just not necessarily models on the table. But this is great for someone who, you're absolutely correct, who is hoping to, you know, get some of the accessories they needed to, you know, feel more official or you know, enjoy some of the luxury items. But you know, at the end of the day, even if you owned everything, you know, this is still awesome because carry cases are great, counters are great, so. While the reception may have been mixed, I'm sure because these were the first supply drops out there, people weren't sure what to expect. But now I think we know that it'll be a lot of the accessories and some of this, you know, maybe the overstock that they had, right? So
yeah, yeah. And I guess if you know, somebody already had some of this stuff and they're feeling generous, they can, you know, maybe give it to a new player. You know, if somebody gets the starter box and then what's in here, that's actually a pretty good way to start. So
100% agree. So that is some of the news that we had to share today. And so one of the reasons, or one of the most recent events that happened actually yesterday was a online Discord community skirmish. And so it was the first skirmish that they've ever held. And so it was, I think, 18 players. It wasn't large because it's a single game, 7-round format. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun, funky stuff that is played. And congratulations to Benny Monahan for winning with Cursebreakers. He ran a pretty solid Acolyte build, which consisted of casting a bunch of spells, not necessarily interacting with your opponent if you needed to. And if you know you won the board, it was really helpful. So congrats to him. And then Gerard the Professor got second with Grimwatch, and I believe it was some sort of like an aggro Grimwatch deck. I didn't get the opportunity to play against him, but it was very cool to look at, and some of the people who had played against him said it was quite powerful.
Yeah, yeah. I was not able to play. I had some other stuff I needed to take care of, but you played in it, correct?
I did. So I was playing Wild Hunt, No surprise. And I wanted to play something that was a little bit different, and I thought it was a great way to kind of see the deck perform, you know, trial by fire. And so I ran a Lost Pages build. So it heavily revolves around Karthaan. And my thought process with this was, you know, if I get max offset, which tends to happen a lot, and then the amber board will come out, the shard pit, then I kind of get, you know, difficulties when I'm trying to score glory and engage my opponent. But if I have a passive glory engine and maybe be able to get, you know, score, you know, some passive objectives, it might put pressure on my opponent to come engage with me. And if they try to come kill Karthaan, then that's all right because I'm the Wild Hunt and I'll charge you. Conversely, if I win the boards, then also I'm Wild Hunt and I'll charge you. So it worked out. More often than not, I ended up playing against people who were more aggro than me. And so whenever I won the board roll off, I would just amber shard pit them. Because they would come in one at a time. I would bump them to a whole bunch of lethals. I'm still quite powerful on the charge. And it gave me the glory I needed to stack on those Lost Pages. So it was fun. I started out pretty strong. And then kind of had one of those games against Rippas where those jaws, man, they do some damage. And then I, you know, had mixed success throughout the day. I think the highlight of my day was playing against two people. One was Benny. Very, very tight game. He had won the board roll off, max offset me. But I was still able to get in there and do what I needed to. And I think it was just a 3 glory difference. 14 to 12, actually. It was 2 glory difference. So pretty tight there.
Yeah.
And then I played against Stuart, and Stuart was someone I played against. Stuart Jenkins was at Warhammer Fest when I was in England last year.
Seems cool. So
long ago now. And he was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me. And I was like, his voice sounded so familiar. And then I was like, oh, wait a second, you played Guardians. And he was like, yeah. And I will tell you, the hardest game I played at that event was against Stuart. It was down to the wire. We had like 2 minutes left. We only got 2 games in, and I won the second game off tiebreakers. So it was a very, very tight game, very well played back then, and very well played this time also, where he managed to, he was playing the Worm Spat, and he like tabled my fighters pretty quickly on, but Lagan and Karthaan went on to win the day.
Oh, wow. It's so funny how much you complain about Lagan, but also how many games he seems to win you.
You know, it's interesting. So I don't know if he won me the game, but it was more so that he like scored me cover ground and Kalkarisk. And then like, you know, when you see Lagan and then you see Skaith or Althan or Sheok, you're going to charge one of the other three.
Yeah. And probably so should charge one of the other three.
completely. So it just happens that Lagan happens to be alive because no one wants to give him any attention, really.
Yeah.
He's just a poor cat who wants to be loved, but no one loves him. Or maybe they do, and that's why they don't kill him. I don't know. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And along the day, I had a question that was asked to me, and I thought it was quite funny. And they asked to remain anonymous, so that's fine. But it was a pretty candid conversation. It was like, dude, why are you playing Grimwatch when you've said yourself it's not optimal?
And you mean Wild Hunt?
Wild Hunt. Yeah, I don't know why I said Grimwatch. Wild Hunt. Oh, I was reading the notes. But we're talking about Gerard earlier. So, yeah, why are you playing Wild Hunt when you've said yourself it's not optimal?
Yeah.
And I was a bit taken aback at first, I think. And then at the time, I was like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm just trying to have some fun. And, you know, it's a skirmish. I'm not trying to try hard it, which is nothing wrong if you were. I mean, you know, the intention should always be to win. But I thought about it for a while. And I was like, you know, why would someone ask me, like, such a direct question? And no offense was taken at all. And then, you know, I just realized that, dude, like, you have to keep yourself motivated to play whatever game that you want to play, no matter how difficult it is to stay motivated or play that specific game, especially during a pandemic, right? A global pandemic.
Yeah.
And so I could like play something like Cursebreakers or Grimwatch or Hrothgorn or Rippas and really min-max my decks, like Thorns especially, and, you know, go out there and win probably a majority of my games. But that's just not fun for me right now. the fact that I was able to take a warband that everybody who played me thought it was aggro, and then make it to where it relies on one fighter who isn't truly remarkable except for the fact that he does 3 damage when he's inspired, and make him my linchpin. The fact that I have one wizard, mm-hmm. and he's only got 2 dodge and 3 wounds. And like, how do I make that work? And I thought that was so interesting, exciting, and fascinating for me. And it was actually really successful. One of the highlights was, you know, I wanted to, like, my litmus test is like asking like Mike or Jimmy or you to play your OP deck and let's see if we can do something about it. And when I played against Jimmy, you know, it was a gotcha moment, like, ha, gotcha, you know, because he was like, you know, what are you doing? And then, so that game didn't really count because he was like, damn, yeah, I didn't know you were doing that. But when I figured out it was too late, and I was like, yeah, like, I don't think that's a fair assessment. Let's play another game. And we did. And it was a lot of fun because, like, he's got a very powerful deck with some high glory ceiling with his Gits. And it was just 20 to 19, you know? And I think dice rolls could have made that margin, you know, larger or shorter, if possible. But overall, like, it was fun. Like, at the end of the game, I get 6 glory. I have 4 lost pages and 2 the end. So no matter what, I'll get 6 glory. So it was cool. And I enjoyed it. And I've never really played control. Or like hybrid control aggro. You know, you hear it around and we talk about it, but I never really tried it. So now I know. And does it work? Yeah. Is it consistent? No. But I had fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an important thing to talk about. I mean, I think a lot of the time we focus on being competitive and wanting to win these events and things like that. But I think there's definitely such a thing as like having different seasons of what you're trying to get out of the game and like what your different goals are. And I mean, like recently I took McGore's Fiends to an event, and for me, the goal there wasn't necessarily to win the whole event, but it was, you know, see if I can make this strategy work, you know, sort of flex different muscles and, you know, try to strengthen different parts of my play. You know, and I happened to do pretty well, making it into the top 8. And, for me, I mean, especially at this point when we've been playing the game for a while, that's kind of what keeps me in it because it's interesting to me. I could probably just play whatever we think is the best, but I don't know if I would enjoy the game as much because it's less of a puzzle and things like that. So, I do think it's a good question, though. I mean, I think asking, you know, if you don't think something is absolutely the best and your best chance of winning, why would you play it? You know, but I think it just depends what your goal is, what you're trying to get out of it.
Yeah, very well said. I mean, I completely agree. It's definitely more about what I wanted to get out of it. You know, I tried to give my opponents the best games that I could, and sometimes I did, and sometimes it didn't work. But it's okay because I enjoyed myself, and I think that's what matters, right? You need to enjoy what you're doing and what you're playing. Otherwise, there's no point in doing it. For, you know, the people out there who are innovating and trying all these new things, awesome. And there's even more time to do that with all these new cards coming out. But then for those who are, you know, single warband, like, refine this deck as much as I can, if that's fun for you, do it. Like, that was fun for me during tournament season, right? Like, yeah. I love doing that. You love doing that. You know, some of our friends through this game love doing that. And then along the way, you have to find other ways to go about it. And it's not that I won't do that in the future. I'm sure, you know, whenever the next physical Grand Clash comes around, that'll be me again. But,
yeah,
you know, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you probably learned certain things playing, you know, a to the end Lost Pages Wild Hunt deck that, you know, could potentially be useful later. So it all kind of works together. And I wouldn't say any, like almost any warband, as long as you're, you know, trying fairly seriously, I wouldn't say that it's pointless or anything.
Absolutely. You know, and it was really funny because I had a lot of people be like, I see what you did there. I think Guardians do it better. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I know that too.
You know? Yeah, Cursebreakers probably do it better too.
Yeah, you know, the point was to play Wild Hunt in a funky way. So,
yeah.
So I appreciate, you know, the individual who asked that question. You know who you are. And, you know, no offense was taken. It was just something that I thought was particularly interesting. But for any other future online events, keep in mind that there will be new cards involved. So the new warbands will be there. the new cards will be there. So I know that the community that handles those events on the Discord is planning to host some events coming up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we will talk about those more as we get there.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's been a while since I've looked forward to something, and it'll be fun. New cards is always fun. So let's talk about some listener questions. So these are some of the general ones we had, and then we've kind of segmented and slotted some of them throughout the event. Event podcast. I don't know what's wrong with me today. I feel dyslexic.
The Whataburger is that?
Yeah, it's just trying to make me go to sleep.
Yep.
You know, so KTG Matt, keep them guessing. Matt asks, what is a card that you love that other people don't seem to love nearly as much? Personally, he loves Countercharge, but he feels like it hasn't seen a ton of play. Mm. He feels like those choices are what gives everybody's decks some personal flair, which I think you mentioned was a great question. So because you think it's such a great question, which I do as well, by the way, what do you think?
I think that Matt is definitely right that this is where the flavor comes in and where the personal flair can come in with certain deck builds. For me, I want to say Desperate Flight has been one of those cards. I just think it's really cool the way it scatters. I find it pretty useful. And then another one was probably Mirror Move. I was a fan of that one pretty early on in Beastgrave. So those might be mine. I'm not sure if anything else comes to mind. How about you?
Yeah, I like Mirror Move as well. I run that in my recent Wild Hunt decks. I like Center of Attention. It's kind of like almost another distraction. And so when Nightmare in the Shadows went restricted, I kind of really enjoy having that ability, especially with Skaith, to kind of just say, come closer to me and then get kicked in the face, right? Hopefully.
Yeah, and I mean, because it can also do the friendly, it can kind of double as a sidestep in some situations too, which is
absolutely
cool.
Correct. And you can manipulate like supports and things like that. And maybe an unfavorable charge can become a favorable attack action, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah, one card I've tried to make work is Earthing Stone, and that one just never seems to work for me, but sometimes I keep trying it.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I've tried to think of maybe I can stick that on Korsh and just teleport somewhere and just ruin someone's day.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's just so much good push tech out there that I don't know if it's viable at this moment. One more card that I wanted to mention was Overkill.
Oh.
I like that one a lot. I think Mike's been using it a lot with his Molog. I don't know if he's using it now, but he has in the past. And it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, if you are going to hit someone for more damage than their wound characteristic, which happens more often than you think with aggro warbands, it's a great way to just gain an extra glory. Is it worth the slot? I don't know, but, you know, having a reaction Amberbone weapon, in theory, is pretty cool to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think maybe one other one that I used to like a lot and I haven't been playing recently would be Bag of Tricks. I don't know if it's as good. I think basically Frenzied Search is just way better. But
yeah,
I always thought that was a cool card too.
I agree absolutely. Well, Matt, thank you for that question. It was awesome. Jonathan, you want to get the next one?
Yeah, this is from Jeff Card on Facebook. He had a couple questions. The first one is, what are your thoughts on the other game modes for Underworlds? Multiplayer, Gargant, Arena Mortis, solo scenarios, that kind of thing. What would you like to see developed in that direction? Personally, I love that there are so many different ways to take the base materials and play different ways. That's a good question. What do you think, Amon?
Yeah, so first of all, I think the other modes are awesome. Some of them aren't necessarily my personal cup of tea, but I know a lot of people who really enjoy them. Mm-hmm. And it brings a new variety and replayability as well to your models and the things that you've invested in. So I think it's amazing. Arena Mortis has been fun. Played that in the past. The Gargant was fun. It's a great way to get your significant other or some of your friends who are not necessarily as into the tabletop scene as you to play something that is cooperative, mm-hmm. right? A lot of the time, a challenge with Underworld is that you can try to get a friend into it and then you inadvertently or even if you don't mean to kind of beat them into the ground and then it kind of turns them off from the game. But if you get them into these co-op modes, then I think that's where some of the fun comes in. And Arena Mortis especially, because you choose a champion and you bump them up to their full potential. I would really, really like to see two different game modes. One would be like a dungeon crawler, something similar to like Silver Tower.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, you and your party, like it could be a multiplayer, you guys like traverse through, you know, different boards. And then when you enter a board, like there are enemies there and you have to take them down. And then another example I think would be like a Last Man Standing or like a Horde mode if you played Gears of War. Or I guess zombies in Call of Duty, since I think that's more popular.
Yeah.
Is, you know, you and your buddies like try to survive as many waves as you can. And, you know, you'll never win, right? But you can always try to beat your next score. And I think that would be fun. And some really cool moments, I'm sure. You'd probably have to create specific cards for that format, but it's not something that they haven't done in the past, and so fingers crossed that maybe something that happens.
Yeah,
how about you?
That would be really cool. I think probably the alternate game mode that I've played the most is the Gargant. Sometimes at my local area, so long ago now, we would have three people,
right?
And I think it's probably the best three-player mode. Just because of the way you're less likely to gang up on one person like you would in some of the other three-player modes. It is interesting in the Gargant version how you are also sort of against each other. There's that point in the game where it kind of turns and you're trying to kill enemy fighters. So I enjoy that. I think that's a really well-put-together mode. I haven't really thought too much about what modes I would like to see. I guess maybe some kind of like official 2v2 mode that was maybe somehow more complicated than just you know, the two of you playing on the same board versus two other people, but I haven't thought too much about that. And particularly one of the good things but also the bad things about these modes is they're not really designed to be competitive. So maybe if there was a way to do a competitive 2v2 mode, that might be fun.
Yeah, dude, I would love that. Probably have something to do with Grand Alliances or something, but like imagine like taking Molog and Gitz, you know?
Yeah. And there would be all kinds of crazy combos.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know, Eyes of the Nine and Nurgle. That sounds so interesting to me, you know. Can it work? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you can, if you really want to go ham, you can take like Curse Breakers and, you know, Far Striders maybe. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe for the person playing.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of different combinations, and depending on what the, you know, objective is, whether it's the same or something else, I think it could be cool.
Yeah, right on. So let's go into the next question from Jeff as well. So, you know, he says, you've talked about card draw manipulation recently. What other mechanics do you think should be further developed in the game? Jeff says that I'd personally like to see some terrain manipulation, not objectives, but maybe blocked hexes or other terrain effects like spell mist that might affect line of sight, but not movement or vice versa. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that could be cool. I think maybe one of the mechanics that I think they could do more with would be the healing mechanic. I feel like there's almost no healing in the game. I feel like there's almost as many cards that are like anti-healing, like... you know, I think there's at least one card that's like no one can be healed within a couple hexes and things like that, and there just isn't that much healing in the game. So I think maybe I would like to see more of that, although I guess I could see how maybe it would be very powerful in certain situations. I really like the idea of manipulating the terrain. I know in season one we had a way to put a block text down, and I thought that was cool.
Shardfall,
yeah. I kind of wish we had that now, or I think you know, maybe in future seasons if we could have blocked hexes or something that players could place, or I don't know. I'm kind of tired of the lethals, but I think there's all kinds of stuff they could do. What about you?
Yeah, I'm super tired of lethals as well, man. And I'm assuming that the next season we'll probably keep that in theme, so. That is a little frustrating to just be able to just put a lethal in like the perfect spot, so no matter what you can just get knocked back into one, or like block off areas of the terrain. So what I would like in that same vein is to be able to remove lethal hexes, or maybe turn them into block hexes. You know, like you know, it's a pit there, you like drop the wall on it, or there's like part of the roof on it, so it like fills it up, but now it's full of rubble and you can't pass by. I think that'd be really cool. There's not a lot that you can actually manipulate as much in this game that hasn't been done so already. So I think Jeff's suggestions are fantastic, and that's something, you know, hopefully the developers do look into. But being able to move some of the more stationary pieces, I think, would be really cool. And I don't know how you would move block hexes because they're kind of printed onto the board. Yeah. But as you say, maybe we can place them, or, you know, imagine if like a lethal scattered, because, you know, you could cast a spell, you know, like transdimensional tele, like, you know, whatever, jump, and like the lethal hex like scatters like four hexes away. Like, that'd be kind of funny and cool. And that way you can kind of counterplay against your opponent's lethals outside from just placing objectives, because sometimes your hands are tied.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it's probably, you know, always going to be a balance. I feel like I don't want too much, you know, added on to the core of the game, but you know, anything to add a little flavor here and there could be cool. So
yeah, I really love the small flavor tweaks.
Yeah,
versus like heavy implementation of one type of mechanic, you know, like flipping, maybe, you know. I don't know if we're going to get to a point that ever hits a critical mass, but if we do, you know, I can see how that can be irksome for objective players, you know, or vice versa. I like just subtle touches here and there, maybe, you know. And I think one of the new warbands, actually Morgox, that was released today, has like a cool tidbit, and we'll talk about it later for sure. But I think those like wall counters are really cool, like thinking of ways in which,
yeah,
certain warbands can generate their own resources and then, you know, spend and gain and spend and gain, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be really cool to have like a certain warband that interacted with terrain differently than other people. I guess we kind of have that with the Thorns and the other ghost
warbands. Yeah, the ghosts, so. Ghost warbands.
But that would be cool too.
100%, yeah. Well, those are it for our general questions. Again, we have a couple more sprinkled out throughout the episode to help talk about certain aspects that we'd want to discuss. But let's jump into the main topic of the day, which is 30 minutes in, Alliance format.
Yeah, the Alliance format.
Yeah, so historically our favorite format, we have won the only team event in the United States, which was fun.
Yeah.
And shout out to Davey, who was part of our team. You know, he's one of the hosts of What the Hex, which is currently on a hiatus, but we hopefully get to see him back and you know, his content. So, Jonathan, how does the format work?
Yeah, so the format is with teams of three players, and they'll face other teams of three players. The way that the deck building works is there's no restriction on what warbands you can play or Grand Alliances, anything like that, but you cannot use the same card across the three decks more than once. So that, in some ways, does potentially limit what you're able to take. And then when the teams actually play each other, you end up pairing those warbands against each other. And then the team that wins at least two of those matches will win the set, I guess is what I call it. I don't know if there's actually an official name for, maybe it's just match, but I'm thinking of like tennis where it's like set, match, game or something.
Maybe round.
Yeah, maybe just round. Yeah, yeah. So why don't we talk about how it worked at ATC, and then we're also doing our team league.
That's right. Yeah, so at ATC last year, the winner of the roll-off got to pick one matchup, and then the loser picked the other two.
Yeah.
And so it worked as like, we nominate team captains. So, you know, I was a captain for our team, and, you know, we would roll. And then if I won the roll-off, then I got to pick the first matchup. And so usually our strategy was, you know, put Molog into Cursebreakers. And then we were just like, we'll just deal with the other two. And for most of the day, it kind of worked out. And that is something that I realized is probably contributed to why we won the day, was because we won every round roll-off except for two of them.
Right.
And both of those roll-offs, they actually matched into what we were hoping we would match into. So there was a very strong advantage to the winner of that roll-off. And that was something that I know that you had, you know, reservations about moving forward when we decided to do this team league. And so when we were functioning, when we were creating, you know, functioning rules for our league, I know that you wanted to, you know, move that in another direction. So why don't you talk about how you kind of adapted those rules to be something a bit more fair to, you know, our participants?
Yeah, yeah. As you mentioned, I think that with the way it was previously, the person that won the roll-off had a really big advantage because they could sort of pick the matchup that they felt was like an automatic win. And it just was usually a pretty big advantage. And I think we only played five rounds at ATC, so, you know, we only won three out of the five, but we did feel that it was, those were the particularly easy rounds. When we were doing our league, and I actually asked around a little bit to see how other team events had worked, and I think Nick Ramon, who has done some of the Italian team events, they said they played it a little bit differently. And then at ATC and then at the ETC events for other game systems, they, I believe, do this way as well. And so the way we're doing it currently, and hopefully it'll be done in the future, is you'll roll off and one team will be a winner and one team will be a loser. And then the loser will pick two of their three warbands to be what are called defenders. And then the winner of the roll-off will choose one of their warbands to attack one of those two defenders. So the winner gets to choose the first matchup, but the loser of the roll-off has some say in what their options are. So if you really know that you don't want, you know, a certain matchup, you can hold that warband back and not put it as one of your defenders. So once the first matchup is selected, then the winner's two remaining warbands become the defenders, and then the loser chooses those other two matchups, basically. So it evens that out a little bit more. I would say there is still a slight advantage to winning the roll-off, but I don't think it's nearly as big. And I would say that it really adds another level to Underworlds, the way that the pairings works, and then also the deck construction. Because, you know, right now I'm probably going to put Potion of Rage in every single one of my decks, but now only one of us can. So it's a pretty interesting addition to the rules that I think most of us are used to.
Yeah, my personal favorite is that hard decision making and the think tank that you have to create before going into an event or a round or a league or a week, is that you and your team have to sit down and talk about, like, hey, like, this is what I think we're going to see. This is what I think our opponents are going to play. Yeah. And then your goal, right, or your objective is, how do we, you know, create lists that completely prevent that or can stop that? And then you also, and that's just the easy part, right? Is guessing what you're going to play and then picking the warbands.
Yeah.
The hard part is not getting greedy with those card choices.
Yeah.
Because only one person gets great strength. And back in the day, like when we played, only one person got ready for action.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so, you know, one person in this current meta will get like a prize vendetta or something that, what's a calculated risk, for example. Only one person gets it. Like, so many strategies revolve around that easy glory gain. So it's so fun. And I remember we had many calls about it. And then I think the day that we finalized it, we like made a list of all like 15, 20 cards that we thought were the best, whether they're restricted or not. And we said, do you need this? Okay, but do you really need it? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, fine, you got it.
Because
it's
kind of interesting. I think, you know, most people that play this game, they really like the deck building aspect. I think it's a big part of this game. And I know that, you know, when I'm building a deck, I might send it to you and see what you think, and you'll give me some feedback and things like that. But it's really, I would say, nothing compared to the way that when, if it's you and me and Davey on a team, when we have to make three functional decks that don't, you know, have any overlap, and if you take ready for action, then we have to figure out, you know, how do we deal with that? You know, maybe I get my turn in that situation, and I forget what I think maybe we gave Davey aggressive defense or something like that, you know. It just adds a whole new level, and it's really fun interacting with your team to make those decisions and try to make the, you know, not just the best deck for you, but, you know, the best overall team based on what you expect to play against.
Yeah, and it all comes down to, like, gut feelings as well, because, like, how do you practice alliance format? It's really hard to, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll, in theory, you'd have to ask somebody to make, you know, three functional alliance format decks and then maybe play yours into one of their decks. And it's a lot of work. So a lot of this stuff just comes down to, do you have a good read on the meta? Hopefully, if you did you build the right decks? And then if you did, you know, hopefully you got the matchups you wanted. So it's a lot of...
Yeah.
And that's where the skill comes in, because, like, you can play into a match or a game or an opponent that was designed to counter yours. And if you can win that game, that ruins your opponent's strategy. Because in their mind, like, that was a gimme. So that's where, like, that skill comes into play, and that, you know, and it's really hard to guess what they're doing, too. So, you know, you don't know what cards they're taking. Like, I remember I played someone who had a Molog with Cloak of Shadows.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the heck? I can't shoot you now with Lund. So yeah. I charged Lund to stand next to Molog, which is a terrible idea, right? But I did it so I could kill his Molog, and I did. And it was just like, that's crazy, man. I had no idea you'd have that. I'm so lucky I was, you know, within two of you.
Yeah, and so. I think that's the really cool thing about the way that the pairings work is normally if you were building a Molog deck, you wouldn't take Cloak of Shadows because you wouldn't reliably be able to make sure that the enemy had ranged attacks. In a tournament, you might have three or four rounds where that's basically a dead card if it was championship format. But in the team format, because you have some control, if Profiteers are popular, you could somewhat reliably make sure that your Molog went into Profiteers over and over again. And it makes some of those niche cards, like I could see like the anti-magic cards being really good if you expected a lot of curse breakers. So it really makes those decisions and some of those more technical, you know, like tech cards a little bit more useful and worth considering in a way that they're really not in the championship format.
Yeah, completely agree. And as you can tell from our enthusiasm, we could probably keep going on and on about this. But as I've just remembered, we are recording a podcast. So now that we've explained how it works and some of the really cool things around it, we wanted to jump into some of the questions here. And so the first question is from Michael Carlin, a very good friend of the show, and from Team Steel City. Steel City asks, what are your overall thoughts on the Alliance format versus Championship? Personally, I'm absolutely loving the Team League that you guys have set up, and I'm actually leaning towards it being my favorite way to play Warhammer Underworlds. Should there be more Alliance Grand Clashes in the future? And while I think we've talked about some of those reasons, Jonathan, how would you answer this question?
I would say I think there absolutely should be more of these events. I think that that's one of the reasons why we started the league, just to get more people used to the format. I think we've done it a little bit in the U.S., and I think that Italy has done it probably more than even we have. I think they've had a few events, although I'm not sure how large they have been. I know that in the U.K. they've had at least one team event, but it didn't use the same card rules. It was just, I think, three different warbands. And then I think the ETC, I think it rotates its location. I think maybe it was in Serbia last year. They have a team event as well, but they didn't use the Alliance format either. They just, I think, had five different warbands against five other warbands, which I think that format probably has some merit as well. I think you probably get some of the same matchup questions, but I don't think you get as much of the deck building interesting aspects. So I think this style of play is absolutely worth playing, and I'm glad that our league is, you know, helping share that with some people that haven't had the chance to play it.
Absolutely. It's an amazing format. It deserves a lot more attention than it currently gets, and you're absolutely correct. There have only, I don't know if there's actually been, there's been two events in total that have used rules that are similar to the rules that we're using for the team league. That includes ATC and then the one you mentioned in Italy. Yeah. And it's so much fun, and it's truly my favorite way to play, as it seems like Michael is slowly you know, joining the light. So,
yeah, yeah. I think the way that it combines the team aspect, where you get to play with your friends, on, you know, working towards the same goal, as well as adding just the complexity level, you know, that just makes it a more enjoyable puzzle to figure out. That's what does it for me, I think.
Absolutely. And speaking of that puzzle, like, it actually really allows your time to shine, right? Like, if you can make, with such limited constraints, like a really, you know, like Davey used to say, that's a rogue choice. Pick a rogue card, right? And put that into your deck and make it work in a fashion that people didn't see coming. Like, that's so amazing. And a lot of the people who play this game, as you've mentioned, like Michael has told me so many times that his favorite part of the game is building decks. Like, he spent hours building one deck because he found it so enjoyable.
Yeah.
And you can do that here, but the options are limitless in theory, right? Because, you know, you can take a real jank card, like, I don't know. I mean, you could just pick anything. Like, I think, like, Hugging Thorns would do really well in this format, actually. So
yeah, it could.
And I just came to my mind. But, like, you can do some really cool stuff and make it work. So the format rules bring deck building to another level. That's why we all like it. I think that's the appeal to Underworlds, is most people I know, including the both of us, have had some interaction with card games in the past, whether it was Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh. I still play Hearthstone, so obviously we like building decks and putting cards together. And we also like tabletop models, and this is the ultimate format for it, in my opinion, and it seems like in yours as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess let's get into the deck building a little bit. I think there are actually different strategies to it, which is pretty cool. You know, in the championship format, in my opinion, the best way to go is to sort of build a take-all-comers deck, you know, sort of based on what you expect to see. You know you have to be ready for maybe the top five other warbands that you think are going to be competitive. But in this system, I think you can do that, but you can also sort of skew, by which I mean you can build a deck that is specifically built to handle a certain play style, such as like an anti-objective deck or, you know, anti-control or something like that. And then because you have some control over the pairings, you can, you know, position that matchup in such a way as to get an advantage. So that's what I consider to be a skew deck. We had a question from Valentin, one of our Patreons, who asks, what differences in decks do you see in single-player tournaments versus our alliance format tournament? Are people predominantly going for a weaker version of the single-player decks, or are they innovating? And then he says, please don't mention that the Despoilers killed me with barb-laden net. And then he adds, just kidding. It was a good strategy.
Yeah, way to throw him under the bus, Jonah.
If he hadn't said just kidding, I wouldn't have said it. But, and I actually think that's probably a perfect example of one of those cards that I don't see a lot of. I don't see a lot of barb-laden net. But if, you know you're going to see Molag or Hrothgorn or one of those war bands that kind of relies on one or two fighters to do most of the heavy lifting, Barblade Net's awesome because it's a pretty accurate two-range attack that gives a charge token if it hits. So while that might not fit in your championship deck, I think that's a good example of like a skew tech in that situation. What do you think as far as the question of, do you just bring a weaker version of a deck or do you innovate?
Yeah, so it's a tricky question to answer, but I think there's definitely a range of options that you can go for, right? So obviously there are pros and cons to how you would, you know, how specific some of your decks are. I mean, if your deck is super specific, then you'll have probably, you know, a specific warband in mind, and the card quality might improve because, you know, you're focusing on a specific type of strategy or counter strategy. And then when you get into and there's pros and cons to both, right? Like, the con here is that if you get into a matchup that you didn't prepare for, you get floored. Conversely, if it's more general, then we see that there is a more of an opportunity or a chance to get into and win your games, but you may not necessarily be an expert of the match or like of the strategy that, you know, you may be racing against your opponent for. So a more general Thorns deck would probably lose to a deck that is hyper-focused on holding objectives and scoring them, like if it was a Thorns Mirror or a Grimwatch Mirror, for example. So it's really just, you know, how versatile do you want to be? How general do you want to be? Versus how well you want to do something. And I think that's the game you have to play. You have to tiptoe across that line and find something that kind of maybe does both. And when we did our ATC run, mm-hmm. that's what we did, is we went more general. We said, you know, what do Profiteers do good at? Shoot things. Okay, do that. And then make sure when you're doing it, you can do it really well. And then when we said, what are Guardians good at? They're like, well, they're really annoying to kill, and they have some great magic abilities, and they can, you know, play some hold objective control. And then we were like, okay, do that, but lean heavier into that, you know, destroy objective control, because you're going to score off it anyways. You're already good at it.
Right.
Do it maybe better than you want, you know, than the average person would do it. And that was our tactic, right? It was like, if we see an objective warband, namely like Thorns or something, you know, Jonathan and his Guardians can... should be able to, and will take them out.
Right.
And then with Molog, it was like, okay, well, you know, we've got super aggro, we've got like a anti-objective, like what cards are left in the pool? Oh, Tomes. Okay, slap that on that guy, have him walk in circles, win the game, right? And that's kind of how we went about it. But, you know, other people may go about it very differently. You know, I know that Mike's team, they just pick the warbands they really enjoy, and they make them work.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I've seen other teams like play warbands they don't normally play because they're trying, you know, they're trying things differently, of course, but they also are trying new strategies, and that's really fun. Like today, I got to watch a game with, you know, someone from Steel City playing Grimwatch, and it was really fun to watch the game, and it was just really interesting because like I was talking to another person from Steel City as we were watching the game. And they were like, yeah, this person's never played Grimwatch before. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. And then that person ended up winning, which I thought was really cool. So it gives, you know, it's, there's just so many options. I mean, again, I can go on and on, but I really like the fact that you can do both. And I think there are serious strengths and weaknesses to both. And generally, I would be in the middle of both.
Yeah.
And I think that's made what's made us successful, I think, in the past. What about you?
Because I think that there's actually like a few different ways you can do it, because you can, because you get three decks, you can make one deck that is almost a championship deck. I think when we did ATC, I think we, one of the things we did when we were building your Profiteer deck is we said, you know, we want to make sure this deck has a lot of punch. I think we gave you Ready for Action, some of the ping damage, you know, that we would want.
Pit Trap.
Yeah, Pit Trap, things like that. You could make, you know, something very close to a full tournament deck, and just sort of rely on that deck to be your linchpin. And then you could have two other decks that maybe, you know, aren't quite as consistent in every matchup, but, you know, have some very good matchups. And the more varied those decks are in playstyle, the more, you know, top level cards you're going to be able to take. Because if you have like one control deck and then one objective deck and one aggro deck, you may only, you know, have overlap issues when it comes to very, very common cards like, you know, Great Fortitude or Great Strength, things like that. But I think alternatively, you could make a few decks that are similar and then try to win on the matchup situation. Because if you basically have a rock, paper, and a scissors, and then so does the other player, I'm not sure if that's better than if you could somehow fit in, like, you know, two rocks and a scissors, something like that. There's just so many different strategies that you can do when you're building the decks. That's one of the cool things about having the league, because the players get to, you know, play for one cycle, like one matchup, and then they get to make new decks for the next cycle. We'll, by the time it's all over, we'll get to see how these teams have evolved and, you know, what they really think is the best, you know, now that they've played, you know, five rounds of team games. So I'm excited to see the final data for that reason.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I definitely think so. And speaking of the, you know, team composition and how some of these teams have evolved, I think it'd be really cool if we, you know, gave some examples of decks and warband combos that we thought you know, that we would take if we were leading or working or playing together on a, you know, an alliance format team. So, my strategy, and I'm not going to get too specific because I don't want to go over every card choice and whatever, yeah. But, mine would be pretty simple. I'd take Thorns as one of the picks, mm-hmm. Or I would recommend them to my teammates, I think. And, you know, I think it'd be really cool to focus on that objective play. You know, you're one of the best action economy warbands in the game. You can get to objectives quickly. You have some teleports that are faction-based. So, A, great faction cards that support the intended playstyle. Great universal cards to pick from. And a powerhouse with the Thorn's leader, the Briar Queen. And then Varklef, too, as a great backup option as well, with the Everhanged as a great harasser. So it's a solid warband, and, you know, you could probably play an Alliance format deck that would look very similar to some of the previous Grand Clash winning decks with just a couple cards switched out because, mm-hmm. you know, you have a pretty clear strategy. And then I would also take a Cursebreaker build mm-hmm. where you just... So it can go two ways. I think the... playing like a very turtly just spam magic, kind of how Benny played his skirmish deck.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be great because you can just score glory regardless. And then, you know, at the end of the day, you do have Amis and Stormsire as some two monster hitters. And then you could even make that more of an aggro build if you wanted to. And then lastly, I would probably take, you know, Rippas or Wild Hunt. To be a bit more aggressive, you know, hopefully counter into those aggro plays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pretty simple. I think for me, the Nightvolt starter warbands have so much reliability and strengths at what they do. You might as well play into it and then kind of give, you know, another warband an opportunity to get on the offensive would be cool. And you could actually psych out your opponents too. You could take Thorns and Grimwatch or Thorns and Gits. And then they don't know which one's playing what. And then you can make the Thorns or Gits hyper-aggressive.
Yeah.
So it's another, like, game within a game where it's like, crap, they're two objective warbands. Which one do I, you know, which one do I go into? And you could take hard aggro into Gits, but I'm telling you, those Gits are going to hit you just as hard, right? So
they could, yeah.
I would probably do something along those lines, and I think that's where my head would be at personally. If you were to build a deck, or a team, rather, what would your strategy be?
So, yeah, as a bit of a thought experiment, I actually put a couple decks together just to see what, you know, cards I would have trouble fighting over and things like that. A little bit of a side note, I think that this format could actually have some potential as a single-player format. It would probably be fun to, say, you and me each put together three decks and then just play it out, you know, and just between the two of us. I think that could be a cool, like, challenge format or, like... You know, I we don't do too many like streamed games or anything, but I think that would be a cool like streaming thing. Like if more games were on either the official Twitch or our Twitch, something like that.
Yeah, like we could make an event out of it. That'd be fun.
Yeah, and it would take a while, I guess, because it would you know, be basically three rounds, I guess. But you know, that's about as long as a normal tournament. So it would just be like a different kind of competitive event that I think would be really cool. And even though it was just two players, as we played the different decks, we'd start to get an idea of like, oh, you know, Amon used this card on this deck. That means I don't have to worry about it in the next one. So that might be an idea for, you know, another format that it would be cool if they explored. Something like that.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, so the decks that I put together were, I made a Wurmspat deck. And it's basically relying, I'll make sure that it's in the show notes, but basically it's relying on like Scorched Earth and Strong Start, some of their end phase cards like Chosen Warriors and Faithful Reward, Team Effort. Basically it's just an aggro deck. I have Mischievous Spirits in there in case you know, I'm against an objective warband. And I think this is the deck that I would throw at a objective warband. Like, you know, if I was playing you and you had your Thorns deck, I think I would throw the Wurmspat at them in order to basically try to remove objectives. I'm not going to give up much glory. I have Crown of Avarice in here. I have Champion's Fortitude. I also have Tome of Offerings. So, you know, hopefully I would be able to disrupt your plan and then, you know, get some glory that way. And it there probably would be some bad matchups for it, but I would just try to avoid those in the pairing. Like, I don't think it would do very well into a control build because it is relying on aggro. But if I don't have to worry about those because of the pairings, then you know, hopefully it would do well. I also don't know if people would, you know, really expect full aggro. They might think maybe it was the control build. So they may even pair something into it by mistake, which is, I think, a pretty fun aspect of this format. The next deck I made was a Gitz deck that is probably very similar to the way Jimmy has been playing. I have some Amberbone weapons, some keys, a lot of the traditional objective stuff like Supremacy, Uncontested, Path to Victory, Dug In. But I also have Keep Chopping in there. I have Restless Prize, which I don't know if I would take in a championship deck, although maybe, because it is really good. I think I would probably take Frenzied Search instead, but I believe I have that in another deck. So it's but because I have Restless Prize, that's why I've went into cards like Dug In and I guess mainly Dug In, because I know I have the support for it. And that's the kind of deck I would want to throw into a warband that I don't think can stop my objective holding very well, or isn't going to have the glory ceiling to beat me. And then my third deck is a Hrothgorn, basically an aggressive deck. I'm not sure if I didn't put to the end in this one, but I do have Frenzied Search to help me with just making sure I have enough cards. I have Cover Ground and Gather Momentum for some easy surges, and then Frugal, Loner, Digging Deep. I have Versatile Fighter, Butchering. So kind of just an aggro deck. And I guess I would probably use this one to kind of fight anything. And even if this one ended up losing a few times, if the other two were able to do well, then you know, that would probably get me through the rounds. So that was kind of my thinking towards it. And you know, I'll make sure those decks are linked if anybody wants to see. It's probably not optimal. I think, you know, after a few rounds, I would probably know what I wanted to change. But I think it's probably a decent enough example.
Yeah, and that right there shows like the beauty of this format is that, you know, we have two people who play a lot of games together who tend to think alike a lot on these cards and warbands, and have the general same opinions for most of the things out there. And then we built three or two completely different teams with, you know, no overlap in our warbands. Maybe the Gitz.
I don't even think we planned that.
Yeah, no, because we purposely kept them away from each other because we didn't want to influence one another's decisions. And so, you know, the fact that I took Thorns, Cursebreakers, and then, you know, some sort of aggro flavor, and then you had more of a, like, specific plan, like, you know, I want the Gitz who can, you know, do really well objectives, I want an aggro Mantrapper, and then I have, like, this objective denial Wurmspat. And so I think it'd be really fun to play those games and see how those worked out. But it's fascinating. And then I'm sure that if Jonathan and I, you know, end up playing in an event and we run through it, it would probably have a combination of those strategies. I think in particular I found interesting is that mine tended to be a bit more general, mm-hmm. like weaker versions of championship decks that I would have already seen do well, with a little bit more flavor added, while yours were very specifically designed to do one thing. And there are strengths and weaknesses in both, right?
Yeah.
So that is cool.
Yeah, and I think that's a really cool thing about the format. There's also certain tech that maybe you split up. Like, I have Scorched Earth in the Wurmspat, and I have Armor of the Everwinter in the Hrothgorn, so they can both kind of do the objective removal, because Hrothgorn has a couple ways to do it with Unexpected Peril and Frozen Earth, and then the other one has the Unmaking and Leave Nothing to Chance. So, but then alternatively, I could have made a deck where, you know, only Hrothgorn has the removal, but he has a lot more of it. So, like, you can kind of split things up, or you can put them all. Like, if you were making a Skaith deck, you could make a deck with Trophy Bell and Tome of Offerings, and then really just try to smash those larger warbands and get a lot of glory from it. Whereas maybe you wouldn't do that in Championship, because that's two restricted slots. But, you know, by using the restricted slots in the Skaith deck, you open up restricted slots for the other warbands. So there's just so many different options and so many different, like, levels to it. I think that's what really makes me enjoy the format.
Don't tempt me with Skaven. Trophy belt and Tome of Offerings.
I know. Those sweet, sweet 3, 4, 5 glory kills.
Those are the best, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely correct. Jokes aside, like the warband or the format is amazing. And if you haven't decided to play it already, go play it, please. Because it's definitely something that will open your eyes to the way that you can do some really cool things and the way that you can, you know, have fun in a game that you may feel like you've already figured out.
Yeah. I think it definitely mixes up whatever meta you think you're in with Championship. I think it opens up a lot of different stuff, because there are certain warbands in Championship that, you know, might be like a B tier, but you know they have one or two really bad matchups. And that's not really the case in this because of the way you can do the pairings.
Yep. So looks like we got another question from Valentin, who is one of our patrons. He goes, what are the warband combinations and playstyles you see in our tournament? Is it always an objective-oriented warband, an aggro warband, and a control/magic warband in a team? And I guess since you're the stat master, hit us away.
That's a great question. I think that that is definitely one way to do it. I would say that that is very common. Like looking at the first week, for example, some of the teams that we had were Rippas, Thorns, and Hrothgorn. That sounds like a great team to me. We had Thundrix, Grimwatch, Hrothgorn. We had a Farstriders, Lady Harrows, Cursebreakers. That's a little bit more of an elite team, so I think that's pretty interesting. We had Steel City with Spikeclaws, Swarm, Molog's Mob, and Despoilers. That's a pretty different team. Let's see. We had Thorns, Wormspat, Wild Hunt. That's sort of similar to what I had. I think you could switch out Gitz for Thorns and Skaith for Hrothgorn, probably. Let's see. Grimwatch, Cursebreakers, Godsworn Hunt. So I would say that typically Valentin is right. You do see an objective warband to get, you know, make sure you have all those cards. And then an aggro, and then possibly a control. Although I think you may be able to get away with, you know, maybe just 2 aggro, or maybe even 2 objectives and 1 aggro. One of the teams in this cycle played Grimwatch and Thorns, and what was their third one? And Wormspat. So that was kind of a different than normal layout. And I think most likely one of those objective warbands flexed a little bit more into aggro, or you know, had some other trick up their sleeve.
Yeah, and that's, again, it's just such an interesting way to do things. Like seeing it at the way some of these teams have designed their warbands, and you know, one of the things that is a little different in this league is that the fact that you can change, you know, your decisions and your warband choices.
Yeah.
Every cycle. Right, which as you mentioned, does like help develop the players, and because for a lot of them it was their first foray into this type of format, so we didn't want to, like, you know, landlock them into you know, some sort of build that may have been suboptimal. So it's been really nice to see them grow and innovate. And one unfortunate, you know, I guess side effect of that is that if you keep winning, or if you have similar records to other people who you haven't played against, then you probably will play against them. You have a high chance of playing against them, you know, in the next cycle. And because decks are due before pairings are announced, you can not tailor, but you can make some very great educated guesses on who you might be coming into. And that's I think that's another fun part of this league that I didn't consider as a side effect, but one that I've come to enjoy, is that, you know, as we are getting narrower and narrower for these teams who have won, like, eventually one of them has to lose, right? And so, you know, if you're playing into Steel City or Team Italy or Amberbone Pillowfighters, like, what do they like to play?
Yeah.
You and know, and may they pull the old switcheroo on you? They're like, oh, they think we're going to play this. So, you know, can we counter that with what they're trying to counter us with? So I think that's so cool.
And I think we have seen some teams do that. Sometimes a team will switch drastically in between cycles. You know, maybe they won the previous one, but they just wanted to change it up, or maybe they think they have a better setup, or like you said, maybe they want it to be a surprise. But then I think we've seen other teams that are doing really well pretty much stick to the same thing each time. You know, if it's not broken, don't fix it, right?
Right.
So I think that's pretty cool. I think we've, I would say so far we've seen basically all of the obvious choices. I think that the most popular warband has been Hrothgorn's Mantrappers. And then after that, Thorns of the Briar Queen. Let's see. But only 23% of the Hrothgorn games have been wins, so that's pretty interesting. And 45% of the Thorns games have been wins. Meanwhile, only two games with Molag, but they won both of them. I think that might have been Mike both times.
It definitely
and
was Mike.
And then Skaven are number two right now with the win rate at 66%. The interesting thing about just looking at the win rates, though, is, you know, it's possible you could have a really good warband in general, but you're forced to give it a bad matchup and then win the other two. So I don't know if you can just take the warband win rate on its face in the same way you can with championship. But
yeah,
it is interesting. Grimwatch have a good win rate so far. Rippas have a good win rate. And Thorns, Profiteers are pretty solid as well. So most of the you know, expected candidates, I think. But it's cool to see.
Yeah. Two things I wanted to say to that. So first, you mentioned that, you know, warband win rate may not be indicative of how well the warband is doing, because it might be a strategy, right? You, like, you know, it was low-key kind of what we did, was like, Davy, go win yours, Jonathan, go win yours, Amon, try to kill Molag, and if you do lose, like, don't lose too badly.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was kind of, and it's like, it's nice to see that here, where you can just be like, all right, we got these two games, you know, just make sure that glory differential is low. So there might be someone who is like the goat, the scapegoat, right? Or like the, for lack of a better term, the martyred, who's, yeah, like, who's going to go in there and probably lose, but it doesn't matter because if the team wins, you know, they win. So that part to me is such a fantastic concept, and one that you can truly succeed in this format. And damn, I forgot the second thing. I'll come back in a second with it, but we can definitely keep going. Yeah, I mean, it's so cool.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we have one more question.
Yes.
And that's from Steve Undrund.
That's right, from Team Axis of Evil.
Yeah.
Which is a it's an interesting name choice. So he goes, what do you think is the best team composition of warbands in a vacuum before the league started? And after seeing all those decks and comps, did you change your opinion, Jonathan?
I think for me, I think the most obvious choice, and I think it's worth keeping in mind that this is in the, you know, current Beastgrave meta without the crushes cards or anything. I probably would have said the Amberbone Gits with maybe Cursebreakers, maybe Rippas. I definitely would want a small warband. And then after that, I'm not sure what my third one would have been. Possibly something like Thundrix, maybe something with Tomes, either Thundrix or Hrothgorn. I think Hrothgorn actually is pretty powerful. So maybe I would have said like Rippas, which are good against objective warbands. Hrothgorn, which is kind of good against everything. Just kind of a solid tier. And then Amberbone Gits. I think maybe that would be my... I wouldn't be surprised if that team did well. But it's hard to pick a best. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And Steve does it, you know, it does make you think. And I think what I would have preferred to see, I think, is what I kind of mentioned earlier, was, you know, Cursebreakers, Thorns, and then maybe Rippas or Hrothgorn. But what I really thought, what I had a feeling of, is when you look at all the top performing warbands, and some of the warbands are some of the best faction cards, which is such a big deal in this format, is, you know, if you had asked me like right before the league started, like, what do you think you're going to see, I would have said Rippas, Grimwatch, Mantrappers.
Yeah.
You know, that and for the most part, I think that was a thing earlier in the season, right? Or earlier in this league, was that people were just picking those three or something similar to that comp, because, you know, they all do what they do very well and can flex into some other things because of their either their cards or their stats specifically. So,
yeah, I wonder how well they counter each other, though, and maybe that's why things may be getting a little bit more varied. I think we had at least one Godsworn in this last one. We had more Thundrix, I think, than previously. Even had an Iron Souls Condemners in this last cycle, although I don't know if we have the result for that one yet. We'll have to see how they end up doing.
Well, that's Tommy, and I don't know if he's... I think he won.
Maybe.
I think he did. I don't know. I think I was talking to him about it in some group chat or something. But what do you... So now that we've seen... You know, so we made our picks, right, at the beginning.
Yeah.
And now that we've seen some of these results, like, do you think you change your opinion given what you've seen already? Or do you think you stay to what you originally thought was going to be good?
I don't know if this has a lot to do with what we've seen so far in the league. I think that because we're only on the third week, it's hard for me to really come up with something concrete. But I actually think if I was making a team this time, I would try to make something like my recent McGords deck, because I actually think that it's stronger than I would have thought it was. And then I think if you also get to control what matchups it's in, I think that it could be very successful. You know, a lot of the time, I think McGords are one of those warbands where there's certain things you don't really want to face. Like, I don't want to get outscored by certain decks and things like that, but if I can control that, then I'd probably give that a spin, at least for a cycle, and then that might you know, allow room for maybe a Hrothgorn deck, maybe a Grimwatch deck, something else along with it, but I'm not sure. I just feel like there's so many. I think Lady Harrows are actually probably another good one that I don't always think about.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think for me, I kind of forgot one of the reasons why we went with the team comp that we did is because we wanted to play those warbands, right? When we went through it,
yeah.
And I mentioned that because I think the biggest thing is that, you know, initially when we were talking about this league, you know, and you think you're going to see X number of warbands or this specific warband here and there, you know, you're thinking like what's objectively the best. But the one thing that's great about Underworld is that if you put a lot of time and effort and energy into a warband, learn its strengths and weaknesses, and you genuinely enjoy playing that warband, you're going to succeed, right, in some way or fashion. And I've seen, and I know we've mentioned them quite a bit, and I guess we are friends with them, but like I really like what Steel City has done, right, is that they just pick the warbands that they're like, I like playing this warband. You know, like, my name's Mike Carlin. I like playing Molog. Deal with it. I'm going to play him. And he's done well, right? And it's so cool to see that because this format, like, if you just play what you want to play and you'll probably do well and obviously have some strategy around it. But if you know the ins and outs of your warbands and you know its strengths and its weaknesses and you have fun doing it, then it doesn't matter. So, you know, to Steve who asked this question, like, yeah, my opinion did change, but it kind of went back to my original opinion on this whole concept was, play what you're good at, play what you know, make some sacrifices here and there to work with your teammates and make sure that you have a general strategy. You know, like I don't necessarily think Davey was too keen on playing Molog, but one of us had to do it and he volunteered. Right.
Yeah. So the other thing that I just sort of thought of that I think is one of the other interesting things about this format is even though you are sort of by definition more restricted on what you're able to do, I actually think there are certain play styles that are more viable in this format than they are in championship format because of sort of how watered down some other decks may be. Like, I think that's one of the reasons that I think that maybe the aggro worm spat might be good is because, you know, some of the things that allow other decks to either out aggro it or, you know, out score it with objectives, they're going to have less of their normal tools. And maybe Worm Spat aggro is viable now, but it's not something that strikes me. I don't think I would pick it for a championship game. And I think that that's sort of what we're seeing, you know, when it comes to people playing, you know, what they really like and they have the reps for. You know, they get to play a version of the warband that they want to into, you know, generally weaker versions of what other people think may be good.
And then, you know, you start seeing, you know, either skill or just the difference in power suddenly be a lot equal. So you get to see some pretty cool results. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. One deck I really want to see, I was just thinking about this, is, you know, like creating a Gitz deck that like just scores by destroying objectives and holding all remaining objectives on the board.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the card, but it's like you get, it's like 4 or 5 glory for holding, you know, all the objectives. And if you flip some and you burn some and there's only 1 or 2 left, Infestation is correct. That's right.
Yeah.
And so that would be really cool in this format. Like, I don't know if that's viable in Championship, but you could probably pull it off here if you take all these, you know, objective destruction cards. And then, you know, one of the cards that was teased today on the Warhammer Underworld's official Facebook page is called Feed the Beast Grave, you know, where it's like destroy all the objectives or flip them.
Yeah. So I think it's as long as there are no objectives on the board, you get a bunch of glory.
You get 5 glory.
Yeah.
So like imagine like doing some cheeky stuff where you're like, you blow most of them up or you flip them and then you get Infestation and then you flip that one and then you get Feed the Beast Grave. Like, I think that'd be insane.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see how these new cards affect the team league, because it's going to, they're going to come out like halfway through it. So,
yeah, I think from what we've seen of Morgox, they're going to be quite popular in the team league for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. They seem real strong. So we'll talk about those next time though.
Yes, absolutely. So to round out the episode, you know, one of the things that we're always looking to hear from, you know, our listeners and our supporters is, you know, questions on the topics that we cover. And so if you have any questions surrounding any of the new releases, cards, warbands, Morgox, Crushes, and Morgwaith's Blade Coven, please do let us know. Ask us those questions. And of course, you know, one question that I wanted to really ask was, or we wanted to ask rather, is, you know, what do you think the best team composition is? Do you know? We'd love to hear your feedback and your thoughts, and we'll save those in the bank because, you know, we're not done with the Alliance format. The team league still has to go on. And as we progress through that league, you know, we'll be revisiting these conversations and these topics, and then eventually, you know, hopefully get on with the winners of the league and talk about some of their strategies. So, you know, appreciate you listening, and you know, always ask us those questions because we would love to hear from you and you know, get some good conversation going.
Yeah, we're about halfway through with the team league now, and I'm sure we'll do another one in the future. And I think I would also like to do some team tournaments, and I guess we'll probably play in those. I know our schedules were kind of too busy to, you know, fit into this one, the league, but I'm definitely excited to get some more games of this format in myself, as well as just running the league.
100%. Can't wait for ATC 2021.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going down.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun.
Got to defend the belt.
Yep.
Hopefully Davey's still there.
Yeah, I need to drag him out of retirement.
Yeah. Davey, if you're listening to this, we miss you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just call me one day and just say rogue choice and then hang up. I'll be happy.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all I got.
Cool. So, all right. Well, I think that is it for this episode. If you have any feedback, questions, or comments, let us know on Facebook at Path to Glory Podcast. You can also follow us on Podbean, where you can find the show notes for this episode. Please also rate us on iTunes, as it helps more people find us. And if you'd like to support the podcast in more tangible ways, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/pathtoglory. Thanks for listening, and we wish you the best of luck on your path to glory.
That's a rogue choice. Nice.